Finish your year with your dream kitchen with help from Menards. Clearview Cabinetry offers a selection of finishes made with the finest materials and built to withstand life's sticky messes. They provide features like soft close doors and drawers and cabinet accessories to match your unique style. Don't wait to finish your projects. Save big money on Clearview Cabinets and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of ABA Mom. I'm your host, Allie, a board-certified behavior analyst and mom of five. And today we have a special guest, Brittany, who is also a BCBA herself and a mom. Brittany, can you start by sharing a little about your journey and what led you into the autism community more than 10 years ago?
Yeah, so thanks for having me on today, Allie. When my son was a little over a year old, he started showing signs of a delay, and he was...
Did you lose me? Looks like it cut out for a second.
Okay, let me see. Do you want me to start over?
Yeah, so if you want to start, you're just... Yeah, go ahead and just start over.
I'm actually going to text my husband to get off the Wi-Fi, too, in case his phone's off the Wi-Fi. Okay, all right. So thanks for having me on, Allie. I got into the autism community and started learning about ABA over 10 years ago because my son was showing signs of a delay. He was non-speaking at over a year old. He was always on the go. Like, he literally never napped anymore after a year old. He did not stop moving. He was having feeding issues too, with like sensory and texture issues. So with my background of psychology, I knew something was off, and I really wanted to go look more into, like, was it a developmental delay or autism? And that's when I just kind of searched and looked into, like, treatment for autism, and I found ABA.
No, I think that is great. And that's honestly, I think, how, like, a lot of people kind of stumble on it, just kind of research, like what is ABA, or, like, you know, what can kind of help support my child? So I think that is a really cool story. Thank you for sharing. How do you feel that motherhood has shaped you as your role as a BCBA?
So because I was a mom before I was a BCBA, I lead with empathy and that perspective taking. Because I got so much unsolicited advice being the mom of a kid who had a lot of behavioral challenges growing up, I really wanted to be intentional when listening to the parents of the kids I serve. So I think that gives me just that different perspective because I can see it from that parent, but also know how it kind of is really hard for parents because in our day-to-day life, whether it's family or medical professionals, we're constantly being told what to do. And I just really wanted to listen more than tell parents what to do.
Yeah. No, I think that's a greater approach. And I was a mom first before I was a BCBA as well. So I think that definitely gives us like a different perspective than somebody who's never, you know, had kids and coming in and working with, I mean, we primarily work with children, right? So
yeah,
with working with kids with various disabilities. So, and something really unique is that you were diagnosed with autism and ADHD yourself. Would you be willing to kind of open up about that and how that you feel that's influenced you to connect with families and clients?
Yeah. So again, with that perspective taking, once I got my diagnosis, I kind of really saw how more relatable I could be to my son. And not all my families that I currently work with are aware of my diagnosis, but they are aware that I do have a child with autism. So they see that of like, the parents, again, like how hard it is. You understand why this is difficult. And for me, I masked a lot of my traits growing up. I mean, I have had to do a lot of therapy and a lot of like healing to understand that my quirks are kind of part of me. So I think that helps me advocate for some of the stimming that the kids engage in too. And then it gives me a different perspective of like, why was brushing my hair so hard for me to do? Why was it so aversive? Was it like a lack of skills, or was it a confidence that I did not have because I was so, you know, in my own shell and anxious all the time? So that's kind of like my perspective that I bring into is like, how can I make sure that my learners and parents are both supported, and then figure out a game plan to be able to teach those skills and even write parent goals too.
I think it definitely makes you more relatable too. So just like you said, there's that connection, knowing that like you have a child with the diagnosis and then you yourself have a diagnosis. So I think that definitely helps parents feel connected with you. Like, okay, like she can really understand. So I think that's really unique. And it's really cool that you can share that experience with parents. And you officially became a BCBA in 2023. What motivated you to take that step after already working in the field for so long?
So kind of funny story. I hated like data and science. I'm going to be completely honest. I was actually teaching yoga and gymnastics. And I was like, hey, this is not, you know, financially stable for having a kid with autism because of how expensive therapies were. So I wanted to learn, again, with my background in psychology, how I could get a better degree to best support kids like my son. Because I hated the feedback I was getting from medical professionals. I was being told to spank my child and getting told to like hit his hand and tell him no. And I did not.
Okay.
Yeah. I did not agree with that. So I read the books. I didn't love it. I actually found the BCBA career path from my current organization. They posted on a job board how to become a BCBA. And that's exactly what I applied to be a habilitation provider. And from there, I just wanted to move up.
That's awesome. No, that's cool. And it's great that you're able to motivate yourself, because you're right too about like therapies and everything. Like it gets, I mean, kids are expensive anyways, but when you add that on too, like it's definitely, it's costly.
It was, yeah. We, because he didn't, my son didn't have a autism diagnosis at the time, but we got OT. We were paying $100 a session for OT, and it just was not, it didn't work out. We couldn't do it anymore.
Right. Yeah. And not a lot of families can. It's very expensive. And then, you know, I've even had, you know, families kind of ask me like, you know, can we just pay you like to have like ABA, like, you know, versus like the waiting list, like, you know, maybe they don't have insurance or like waiting on insurance, things like that. And I'm like, honestly, like it's like really it's expensive. Like ABA is expensive, therapy is expensive, like insurance helps, like, you know, but it's costly. It's definitely I mean, I definitely think all those things are worth it. OT, speech, definitely ABA, but it's expensive.
Yeah.
Looking back, what was the hardest part of the process for you? Especially since you weren't into all the data things that kind of came along. What was the hardest part when you were aspiring to become a BCBA and balancing your family life too?
Yeah, for me, again, I wanted to do it all. I think because of my childhood and early adulthood, I had that like hyper independence, and I realized very quickly it was not going to work out for me. Luckily for me, because of my autism and ADHD, I also don't sleep at night very well. So I made a plan, like had to plan out months in advance who was going to take my kids to dance or to feeding therapy and work out things with my schedule. I really had to communicate with my parents and like other people in order for them to like be able to pick up my kids from school and help out in that way, because I was still working full time and I was raising at the time, like even breastfeeding too. It was very, very difficult.
My gosh, on top of that.
Yeah. So I actually, that was kind of inspired me to drop the alcohol and stop drinking, because I was like, I can't be hungover. I can't have headaches. I have to be the best parent, the best student, the best employee that I can be. And honestly, that ADHD was a little hard for me. That's why I had to make a plan. I had to use visuals. I had to use reminders. And having that ABA background is what was helpful in navigating all this.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of, I think for me too, like I also have like, I have an ADHD diagnosis. And, you know, I think if I didn't have, if I didn't write things down or put things on a calendar or do, like, I probably wouldn't remember. So, and all of those visual things, but that's something I learned like along the way when I was in grad school for ABA is like, oh, okay, I'm going to start applying those things to my life, and started like self-monitoring my own behavior. And that was really helpful. Like all of those visuals, all of those things were super helpful to me as well.
Yeah.
as a mom, how do you apply ABA principles in your own household, especially with your kids and with different ages?
For me, just that experience of growing up, being now that I know I was autistic and ADHD, I knew for a fact punishment procedures did not work for me. You could take away absolutely everything and I still would do. I would sneak out of the house. I would, you know, I didn't want to be home. I would never improved my behavior. I didn't ever stop doing that interfering thing. So I use a lot of shaping and reinforcement. The biggest thing I think with the kids being at 4 years apart, so my kids are 8 and 12. My oldest has an autism and ADHD diagnosis. Well, my daughter has only an ADHD diagnosis, but I do think she's still on the spectrum. It was really hard for them to be heard and validated because they have such different skill sets. We had to work on like my daughter understanding that her older brother wasn't being mean. If he doesn't respond or accidentally break something, he just needs talking breaks. He needs auditory breaks. He gets overwhelmed really, really easily. So it was that perspective taking, that shaping of her responses and my son's responses to get him to talk a little bit more. And a lot of, again, that reinforcement, because if my kids were lying or they did something, I found out very quickly, you can't just take away your iPad. You can't reduce screen time. That was not improving their behaviors. So reinforcing, using those token boards, that's where we use a lot of that. And those task analyses to teach new skills. But to be honest, I use a lot more ACT. So acceptance and commitment training with both of my kids because they're a little older. Yeah. Really, like, our big focus is that self-regulation, that cognitive flexibility right now, because I think ABA helped a lot more when they're younger, but we have all these different emotions and puberty coming up now. So that's where that, you know, emotional regulation is really hitting us hard.
Yeah, especially with my teens, I'm definitely seeing that. I've kind of had to shift some things around, but ACT curriculum is great. So I'm so glad and happy that you hear that you're using that. So that's awesome.
Yes.
What do you think the biggest misconception parents often have about ABA, and how do you help them see its true value?
So I know the big one is going to be that all ABA is abuse and has to be compliance-based without like heavily focusing on play and assent. But I really do think that just like some ABA can be abusive, OT, and especially feeding therapy, because we've done feeding therapy, some of that can be on that borderline of abuse. So whether your kid's attending school or something, we really should be looking at more of those green flags across therapies of what to look for like medical providers and in organizations. So I learned very quickly that a school was not a good fit for my son when he came home with scratch marks on him. And they kept telling me that he was the aggressor and he was so disruptive, but at the end of the day, they couldn't tell me what happened to him. And they did not have an open... Yeah.
That's really scary.
Yeah. Yep. But I was never allowed to go in and observe. So no open door policy. I think that's a huge red flag across therapies and schools. If they don't allow your child to have time to be a child or for other therapies, that's a huge red flag. As an autistic adult, 40 hours a week burns me out. I really don't think kids should be in therapy for 40 hours a week. I think 30 hours is sometimes borderlining it. I really think they should be allowed to watch TV or play video games or do nothing and be a kid. Yeah. So yeah, I think they just need that balanced life.
Yeah, I totally agree with that too. And then, you know, it's so funny because my last episode was on homeschooling. And we just talked about, it's actually just posted today, but it was just talking about how homeschooling your kids, like you still get to do all those extracurricular and you still get to do all of like that parent like co-op thing. So, I mean, I have my kids are in school, like they do pretty well for the most part, but I think it's not for everyone. And I honestly, like if I could go back like in time, I might have just started homeschooling. Like, I think it's a great thing for, because it's a long day. It's a long day for me. Work days are for me.
Exactly. Yeah. I agree. Like that's after I pulled him from that school. We found this amazing school that both of my kids went to and they are very affirming It's a gifted school, so they understood that twice exceptionalness. But if he didn't get into that school,
that's awesome.
Yeah, I was gonna homeschool him because there was not a good fit. It just they're causing trouble sometimes because they're still learning to regulate, and they're also really intelligent. You know, that's a recipe for disaster sometimes.
It is. It's definitely hard. I actually have my oldest, who's very like high functioning, very intelligent, but also has ADHD. So like that accommodation, like needing the accommodations, but also like the exception, like that dual exceptionality it's rough. Like, and a lot of times, like unless they have the teachers kind of have like the training and like the right classroom management, and the right accommodations and the right support, sometimes it could be a great teacher without enough support. Like it doesn't work well.
Yeah.
So it doesn't match.
Exactly.
So I'm glad you have. Well, that's an awesome school.
Yep, they did great with his. It took me a little bit to get a 504 plan because, like you said, those accommodations. I was like, yeah, he's doing great in school, but he won't ask for help to open his water bottle. And we live in Arizona, so.
Yeah, he's going to need some water.
A bit.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and I find those things, too. It's just like the social things sometimes, like those little things, not being able to advocate for yourself. That's important, too. And I find sometimes like it's one or the other. Like it's like, OK, I'm really good in this area, but this area I'm like really lacking it. And I think that's true, you know, for most everyone, like that finding that balance, but especially those that like kind of struggle with those social skills and that advocating it. But it's like, but they're doing so well.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm so glad you found that school. I think that is really neat. So. How do you find balance between being a mom and a clinician without blurring the lines?
So I think being a clinician helps guide some of my actions because I did not have the best parent models, honestly, growing up. I did not feel like I was very emotionally supported. So when my kids had these interfering behaviors, I was not able to tap into being regulated and supporting them or, you know, helping them calm down. So that's where that clinician aspect really was like, hey, they are in crisis procedure. I need to be completely neutral. I need to do these reactive strategies. Because my son was engaging in meltdowns that would last several hours with like aggression and hitting. And when they're smacking you in your face, and it's your own kid, you're like, what is happening? So that's where my training really helped get me through those periods and like learn how to prevent it. But now I'm always trying to be mom. So I use ABA to help guide some of them as, you know, those interfering behaviors start to pop up.
But right.
Mom side of me just kind of reinforces some of them sometimes because that's real life. And I'm honestly tired because I'm like, sure, go ahead. I don't care today. Like, watch your TV. I need 5 more minutes. I need to go take a break in the closet where I don't hear anything and regulate myself. And then we'll come back. But, you know, I think that's the biggest thing is ABA. They're like, you have to do this. You have to follow the BIP. 80 to 100% of the time, they have to be on it. You can't ever reinforce that behavior, you know, really talking about extinction. And I'm like, no, it depends on the day. You know, we're tired, we're burned out, we're allowed to make mistakes.
Yeah, I think that's so true. And you kind of said it because that is such real life. Like there's all the time. It's just like without even having an awareness because I have that emotional connection with my kids. This is my home. This is where I want to just rest and have that space for myself. But I think you're absolutely right. Like as a parent, you know, could look very different than when we're in the clinic. So you've written for East Valley Moms Blog and is it AZA United's ABA blog? What inspired you to share your personal and professional experience through blogging?
So I have always enjoyed writing since I was little. I think because I felt like I didn't really have anyone to talk to growing up. I journaled a lot. I was really introverted and never shared like my true thoughts because of all the masking I had to do, which I learned is like a survival trait. I think it's something I always wanted to do. I always wanted to share that people don't have to be alone or shamed for the way that they think or they exist. So I knew the best and fastest way to get out information to people was starting to blog or, you know, start an Instagram page to share our experiences as being parents and just dealing with a young kid who had a lot of challenges.
Yeah. I think that is really positive, and you probably kind of have created like a community like doing that with the blogs. Is there a specific blog post or piece of writing that you're especially proud of that really resonates with families?
So the one thing I really learned from teaching gymnastics, because we would get a lot of kids on the spectrum or kids of ADHD into gymnastics, was writing about like sensory processing difficulties and the differences. I know a lot of us professionals and BCBAs, we focus on like those observable events, but I knew from my own sensory issues, my son's sensory issues, that drives a lot of our behavior. So I wrote about like kids being sensory seekers, sensory avoiders, how you can be a mix of those things depending on the situation and experience. So it's really important finding the appropriate accommodation that works best for you and your kid, and finding time for them to be able to regulate through their sensory adversaries.
Yeah, I think that's great that you address that as well, because I think sometimes sensory behavior when the function is sensory is sometimes overlooked. And there's always, you know, there's times where it could be like the dual functions and things like that. But I think because a lot of times, like, it's a private event, you know, like they can't, you know,
tell you
I need to move my body this way, or I need to do this, like, for, you know, sensory. So I think that that's really neat that you address that, because I think that could definitely help a lot of families, especially, you know, neurotypical that maybe have like a neurodivergent kiddo that don't understand that concept. So I think that that's really cool. What role do you think that the blogs, podcasts, social media play in spreading accurate information about autism and ABA?
I think there's absolutely no regulation of it, and it's actually terrifying. I learned very quickly that I seeked that connection out when my son was younger. So I joined the Facebook groups of parents of autistic kids, and I read all the misinformation, and I was really frustrated. And there's no way to regulate it. It's just happening so frequently out there. It's not going to be accurate, because a lot of the accurate information may be hidden behind paywalls because we have to pay to get access to research. Or it might be hard to access, you know, finding a BCBA or, you know, someone professional like that compared to a mommy blogger who has 500,000 followers, or you're finding a medical professional that may have like 1,000 followers.
Right.
I also think, we're in a really scary season where I am going to say, like, our government is pushing that misinformation out there, like the Tylenol thing to families. So we are going to be seeing a big discrepancy within the treatment of autism. And it's really scary, because I feel like some of our kids are going to grow and thrive, and some of our kids aren't going to be able to access any therapies.
Right. The internet, like, there's all kinds of misinformation out there. I think, you know, there's definitely some positive directions and some not so positive ones. What areas of ABA do you feel still need the most growth?
I would say our parent trainings. Honestly, I think we do an okay job of providing somewhat adequate training, but when the parents are neurodivergent themselves, because a lot of us aren't able to get late diagnosed because of money or access to like a diagnostician who can diagnose you, you know, for adults. I think when parents are neurodivergent themselves or have multiple kids with autism or ADHD, that's where parent trainings can get really tricky, because how can we all navigate these situations when you have multiple kids having behaviors that set each other off if we're only focusing on one kid? I do think that we should get more experience with ACT in order to best support these parents, because some of us really need to change our mentality as a parent and work on our cognitive flexibility. And we definitely shouldn't be using like the same interventions and curriculum for all parents and not individualizing the strategies and feedback we give them.
If you could just leave parents listening today a piece of encouragement or wisdom, what would it be?
I think, as parents, we need to do the best job of being the most regulated parents, mentally and physically healthy parents for our kids. We need to learn to ask for help, get out of our comfort zone to be the best advocate for them, and think long term, because honestly, we're not going to be around forever. So we have to be mentally healthy, physically healthy to be the best support person for our kiddo.
That's absolutely true. Well, thank you, Brittany, so much for your time today. It was a pleasure having you on. And if you want to reach out to Brittany, she is on Instagram and also has her blogs. So please feel free to reach out. It's East Valley Moms Blog and AZA United's ABA blog. All right. Thank you so much, Brittany. And always remember, you are not in this journey alone.
Thanks, Sally.